Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You just listened to the best theme song on the planet, and people are starting to copy it, if you know what I mean. So we are here on Building Fortunes Radio every Saturday with a good friend of ours. His name is Scott. We do this at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. And for those people that might be unfamiliar with my voice because you're new, we do this radio show. I started Building Fortunes Radio a little bit over 10 years ago, I suppose, tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. I wanted a microphone, a platform to be able to talk about things that people probably weren't comfortable or weren't willing to talk about or just weren't talking about a lot of things related to home-based businesses. So I knew we needed to do that. We call it Building Fortunes Radio because we help people build their fortunes, whatever they determine their fortunes might be. So we started this, and a while back, there was a gentleman that was writing for Seeking Alpha, which is a domain name, seekingalpha.com, that talks about publicly traded companies, and his name is Roger Van Vlissingen, and Roger was one of those anti-MLM guys that you knew just hated MLM. But he was logical, and he was bringing up some very valid points, and some of the points that I would bring up too, because I've said, you know, sometimes when MLM is done bad, it's done bad. So Roger was real good with that. I asked him to be on our radio show. He brought E. Robert Smith, and we did a couple of radio shows. Well, shortly after that, I got a phone call from Scott Johnson, who I did not know who Scott Johnson was at that time. So Scott introduced himself, told me he listened to those shows. He says, you know, there's something a lot of people are missing. And I said, what's that, Scott? And he said, the tools scam associated with MLM. And I think I was, like, as I was listening to Scott, we were, you know, first-time conversation, I was thinking about, like, what was he talking about? Like, is it the same thing I'm thinking? Like, is it the Amway thing? Like, I knew that Amway had the books, tapes, and functions. They call it the systems. And we found out that that was true. So I'm going to kind of shorten my introduction for Scott Johnson here. We've been doing this radio show ever since. It's been, I think, 8 years, one of our longest-running radio shows, and we miss only a few. But we've been here for a long time. Sometimes we do the radio show ourselves. Sometimes we have a guest, and tonight we have a repeat guest. So I'm going to try to cut my introduction as short as I can to give as much time as we can to our repeat guest and then Scott's introduction as well. But you can check him out if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson. That's buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson. You'll be able to hear this as well as the previous radio shows we've done. And Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. Yes, we do have a return guest from Down Under, and I'm really excited to have that conversation with him. But first, like we normally do on this show, for the new listeners in particular, and for those that just don't pick stuff up very quickly, you know, we know that repetition is the mother of learning. And so we go over what I see as the two main problems with MLM. Not that there aren't other problems in addition to these two, but these are the two big ones. These are the two big rocks. Everything else is a pebble or a grain of sand compared to these two things. And the first one you mentioned is the tool scam. And in Amway, it's on steroids. The upper-level distributors make multiple times more from the tools than they do from the Amway side of things. And like you said, it's books, tapes, and functions. That was what it was back in our day in the 90s. Now it's pretty much the same thing. It's just been, you know, more current technology. So it's still books. It's not tapes. It's generally MP3 and MP4 downloads on your telephone or your computer. And then functions, they're still functions. They're still meetings. They're still, you know, small, medium, and large size meetings. And there's also voicemail, there's website access, there's all kinds of different sources of profit. And what makes the tool scam a scam is the fact that the upline does not admit that they make most of their profit from the tools. They give every impression that all of their material success came from Amway. And it sort of does indirectly, because nobody would buy the tools if they were not in Amway, but they don't talk about that. They just kind of gloss over that fact and pretend that oh, yeah, these are great products, we make a lot of money, so on and so forth, and they simply lie by omission, which in my mind is RICO fraud. It's at least business fraud if you're not describing the business model to a prospect or your downline accurately, then you're committing business fraud. I'm not a lawyer, but that seems pretty obvious to me. So anyway, that's the tool scam. The other big problem is lack of retail sales. And the definition of retail sales that we use on this show is when somebody who's not part of the MLM compensation plan buys something. If it's you or your downline or your upline for that matter, buying something, that's just internal consumption. And there's nothing wrong with internal consumption. But if and only if it is accompanied with retail sales. In other words, if all or most of the products or services, depending on the MLM, being purchased were from the distributors, then that would be an illegal pyramid. There's no law that defines what the minimum is, but the settlements with Bima and Herbalife, gosh, it's several years ago now. We used to say recently, but that was 2016. But those two settlements out of court pretty much said 50%. Now, the Herbalife one is a sliding scale, and it's a little bit more complicated, but it does go from one-third to two-thirds, so the middle of that is 50%. And Bima was more straightforward. It was 51%, has to go to customers, and then the other 49% or less, because you can exceed 51, that's just the minimum, to be able to be considered as a legitimate MLM. And what you're doing there is you're showing that there is free market demand for the products or services. Someone who has no other interest other than buying the product or service is willing to buy it. Whereas distributors, you know, my one-line explanation of MLM promotion is if you work hard enough and long enough, you'll get filthy rich. That's the selling point. And so the distributors, and this came out of the Burn Lounge decision, the judge there said that the distributors have a conjoined opportunity or a conjoined incentive or a combined incentive, however you want to, you know, word it. In other words, a customer has only one incentive. Is that product worth the price match to it? If it is, they'll buy it. If it's not, they won't. And that's the end of it. For a distributor, because of that conjoined opportunity, if you work hard enough and long enough, you'll get filthy rich. They, including me, because I was in Amway for several years, and so I know everyone is under the same umbrella, I would grit my teeth and bite my tongue every time I bought an Amway product because they were overpriced. But the upline, showing their material success, said, hey, don't worry about the price. These are great products, and they pretty much sell themselves. That was some of the language that was used to get over that sort of an objection. And so because of that conjoined opportunity, because that hope or promise or whatever expectation, whatever word you want to use, that down the road, buying these overpriced products will be worth it to the distributor. Obviously, they're not worth it to a customer because the customer doesn't get anything out of it other than an overpriced product. So that's the reason you have to have retail sales. It doesn't matter what the price of the product is. It could be even less than you find in a store, but if the quality is bad, over time, you're not going to have very many customers because word's going to get out that it's bad quality, and you're going to be struggling to find retail sales customers. And so that's why I say what I say about retail sales and why it is the most important thing to prevent an MLM from being an illegal pyramid. So that's my little spiel. And by the way, the lack of retail sales is either universal or nearly universal amongst MLMs as far as I can tell. Now, we do have an exception. Neora, which was decided a couple weeks ago, claimed that they were in the 70, 75, 80% range of customer retail sales, and the decision that I read bears that out. However, I would have to say that the FTC never interviewed any distributors or former distributors. If they had, and if they had asked them, hey, these customers that you have, did you cheat? I think they would have found, I don't know how much, but I'm sure they would have found at least some people that were cheating, that were basically selling products to their dog or some fictitious person, you know, maybe a neighbor that was willing to buy the products even on their own credit card, ship to the neighbor's house and everything like that. And yet the distributor would go over and pick up the products, give them a check so that they would pay for their credit card bill, you know, for those products. Those are some of the things that are done to cheat. And so that was never a part of this lawsuit from what I can tell. There was nothing in the decision that spoke to that issue. And I think it's unfortunate. And I hope that the FTC wakes up, because they did a very poor job on this lawsuit, very poor. And Peter, I don't think there's another active MLM lawsuit right now. So even if they filed one tomorrow or Monday, the time it would take to go to fruition, right, it would be somewhere in the order of 4 to 5 to maybe even 10 years to get to the end point. And so we are in a lull right now where there's nothing going on, and there won't be anything going on for at least 2 or 3 years, because that's how long it takes for these lawsuits to, you know, find their way through the process until they get to either a settlement or a trial. So it really is extremely disappointing. But it's not extremely disappointing to have this return guest from Australia. We've had Jerome on here a couple times. I think it's been twice already. And he does just a really good job. He's known as the finance guy. He's got a website. And Jerome, if you could mention your website here at the beginning, and that way people can find you on the internet and so forth. And I'll just go ahead and do my shameless plug for my websites, which is facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. So it's ScottTexJohnson, all one word. And what you'll find there is links to my 3 websites, the link to this radio show, my YouTube channel, my email. It's all there. When I say that these people are making 10 times or more from the tools in Amway than they are making from Amway products itself, there's actual documentation. Actually, it's the people that were kicked out making these flat-out statements. So it's not me saying anything. It's me saying, hey, look what this guy said. That's what it is. So anyway, without further ado, Jerome, welcome to the show again. And please give the audience a little bit of an idea as a review, because we have new listeners all the time, you know, who you are and what you do and that sort of thing, and then we can get into what we want to talk about tonight. And for you, it's Sunday morning in Australia. You're exactly 12 hours off from Peter. It's around, I guess, 8:40-something in the evening here on Saturday, and it's the same time there in Australia where you are, except it's Sunday morning. So go right ahead and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be back again. I am the online presence is the finance guy. My website is just finance-guy.net. And the original intention for that website was to give people, I guess, tools and education to do things themselves, like when they want to apply for a home loan or make investment decisions. But that content wasn't gaining traction. And then I happened to write an article about multi-level marketing, and that did take off. And I thought I'd only need the one, because the more you look at them, the more similar they are, because all the companies that I've looked at pretty much take the same basic model and then just add their own product or service to it. But despite that, people still wanted to read an article about a specific company, not just a generic one about the business model. So I ended up writing a lot of individual MLM reviews. I've just finished one on Optavia. I published that last night or yesterday in the morning for your time. So I'm going to keep going forward because it seems to be something that that the audience responds to.
Yeah, that's great. And so I think you mentioned last time you were on the show, or maybe we were messaging back and forth, you wanted to talk about the conferences. Did you have any particular questions about that, or how did you want to get into that discussion?
Yeah. I just remember that, just for the background for people that that don't know, I have had some experience personally in MLMs. Like, I've gone with friends to meetings, and I've kind of joined for short stints just to experiment and see what it's like. And I found that there was always a huge amount of hype about the upcoming conference. Like, you have to qualify to go, or you can buy tickets to go, or whatever it is. And I just noticed from the few meetings that I went to, the reason why I got, discouraged, it wasn't just Amway. I looked at Herbalife meetings. I looked at a couple of USANA ones and Amway, and they were all exactly the same. Like, you'd go there, and they'd say you have to go. It's like training, but all it really is repetition, because they show you a very basic presentation of the compensation plan, saying, you know, you've got to make, are there any new people in the audience? Now's the right time to get in. And then they'd get super excited because a new energy drink's just been released or something like that. And then they would just go on about how somebody was poor and then they found this opportunity. And I kind of thought, I found, I think it was like an itinerary for one of these weekends away. And my friend said he was thinking about going. And I looked at it and I said, so you're going to pay, I think we were living in Sydney, and I think it was somewhere else in Australia. It was up on the Gold Coast or something, which is a pretty cheap flight. It's only a couple of hundred dollars. But I said to him, you're going to pay to go up there, and you're going to pay for two or three nights in a hotel, and you're literally going to wake up in the morning and go straight into a room like we were just in and listen to the exact same stories again, and all day it's just going to be that. So you're going to this tourist destination. You're not actually going to be enjoying the location. You're not even going to be outside. You're going to be in a dark conference room. So when I see, like, they go to these exotic locations, like they go, we can go to Hawaii. It's like, but is it really a holiday, or are you literally spending like 80% of the time in a conference room listening to more stories about your MLM?
Yeah, and that's certainly now. I can only speak to Amway because that's the only MLM I've ever been in. And certainly there are different types of meetings. I would say that there's basically three types of meetings. One is when you're showing the marketing plan, and that can be done, you know, like a one-on-one in someone's, kitchen table. It can be done in a group setting where a number of people go over to someone's house and there's a group of people there, or it could be in a hotel conference room, whatever that is, that's, you know, showing the marketing plan, whatever the environment is, there's, you know, different environments. Now the second type of meeting, which is larger, is what's called a seminar or seminar rally. And that's typically once a month on a Saturday afternoon and evening. And that is pretty much what you're talking about. You know, people come in, hey, I was poor, now I'm rich, you know, ain't it great, that kind of thing. And certainly there's very little talk about retail sales at those meetings, at any of them, actually. And they really are, you know, getting you hyped up. Now, the third type of meeting is what's called a major function, and these are usually three or four times a year, and these can have generally thousands of people there. I was at what I think is still the largest business conference ever, back in 1993. It was in the Georgia Dome, and there was over 80,000 people there. It was a Dexter Yeager major function. I think it was a free enterprise, you know, Labor Day type of a function. And it was a lot of people. We packed the Georgia Dome, and it was filled up. Now, at those major functions, that's where you get guests, people that maybe have they've won Olympic gold medals. We saw former President Bush there. Bush the senior was the sort of the headline speaker at that event in Georgia. There's also typically musical groups. There's comedians. There's motivational speakers. You know, all kinds of different things that go on during those major functions to kind of split up the time so it doesn't get monotonous. And it is entertaining. You know, part of it is entertainment. And it's also to get you motivated, because they know that your motivation is going to last about 3 months. And so, golly gee whiz, every 3 months there's a major function. Isn't the timing incredible? And so, that's kind of a really short answer to your question as far as what are those conferences like. Each of them has a different purpose, and they're pretty different from each other, even though there are commonalities. Because even at the big major functions, you'll hear, speeches from like new diamonds and new emeralds, people that just reached that particular level. And in the early years for me, we started in January of 1993, it was still growing very rapidly. Amway was on a very rapid upward trajectory. And so at every one of these, whether it be a seminar or a major function, there was a lot of people achieving higher pins. And there was a lot of excitement because of that, because it was actual proof that people were growing their businesses. Now, they were growing illegal pyramids because of the lack of retail sales. Unbeknownst to me, that was a requirement. I had no clue, and most people don't, by the way. But anyway, it was an exciting time, and there was a lot of excitement created by that growth and all these new people. They call it crossing stage because they achieved these higher pin levels, and they were telling their story. And the higher the pin level, the longer you have on stage to tell your story. If you were like a new platinum in a seminar, maybe you got 3 or 4 minutes. If you're an emerald at a major function, maybe you got 10 or 15 minutes. If you're a new diamond or above, especially the aboves, you might get, 20 minutes, a half hour, maybe even 45 minutes if you're, a triple diamond, for instance. So that's kind of some, again, really high-level description of the different meetings and conferences. Did you have any other comments or questions about that?
I think I got a little bit interested in it because I think in Eric Schreiber's book, The Merchants of Deception, he talked about it a bit and how a lot of the strategies that they use are actually the same as what they do in cults for manipulation, like where they'll be over the top with affection, which they call love bombing. And if you do anything to go against their way, like if you say you might not come to this conference or anything, it's kind of like almost like a crime. And another thing that was mentioned was sleep deprivation. So that's why I saw a timetable for, I can't even remember which company it was, because like I said, they all copy the same, they all tend to mimic each other, but it's, the schedule really was like from 7 a.m. till well after midnight, full of activities that I'm sure people would have been pressured to participate in. And when they have these things called like night owl sessions where after the major conference, they were expected to go and sit in a small room with their personal upline, and then stay up all night, I guess, continuing the hype. And it just kind of seemed that how many times, like, even when I went, the conference that I went to one of those, the big ones in Sydney, where there would have been, it was on a Saturday, and there would have been a couple of thousand people there. And I just remember at the beginning, somebody got up to go to the bathroom, and the guy on stage was like shouting at her, like, you can't leave, you know, the information you might miss something that will make you a millionaire in those 2 minutes that you're out of the room. And she never came back because, I mean, who wants to be spoken to like that in front of a room full of people? And then I just kind of noticed after that when you said the exact thing that you said happened, like the first person came up because they had reached some level and they had like a short time to tell their story. And then the next person came up, and then eventually the keynote guy for the day, who was the highest ranked person of the day, had his hour story, which was exactly the same as the stories you hear on the CDs. You know, I was a dairy farmer struggling, and, you know, I had back pain from herding sheep all day, and then I found this opportunity. But all the people before that had similar opportunities. I was a stay-at-home mum. I was this, I was that. So you're literally just sitting there listening to different versions of the same story about how somebody had a hard life and then they found Amway and now they're doing better.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I can remember being up, you know, and I saw Dexter Yeager several times. He was the big kahuna in Amway for years and years. He passed away, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. But he would typically come in on the Saturday night, because we would usually start the major functions on a Friday evening. You know, maybe it would start at, I want to say, 7 or 8 o'clock, and we would go easily till 1 or 2 in the morning. And then we would start again around 9 a.m. Saturday morning and go all day with, you know, breaks for lunch and dinner. And it would go very late. Dexter would generally come out on stage at 2 or 3 in the morning and talk for a couple of hours. And so you could easily be up until 4 or 5 a.m., you know, Saturday night, Sunday morning, having been there the entire day and totally burned out. And there was people literally falling asleep in their chairs. You know, they were trying to stay awake because they do say what you just said. You know, don't get up and go to the bathroom. You might miss what you need to hear. You have to go diamond. And so they keep people there, and they shame them to keep them there. Because once one person leaves, right, then more people are going to go, yeah, I really need to go to the bathroom too. So it can be one of those things, if you don't nip it at the bud, it's going to get out of control. And so they have to do that in order to keep everybody there. But people are literally falling asleep in their chairs. Now, I generally stayed awake. However, I had experience in the Navy with rotating shifts, and so I was used to, you know, being able to force myself to stay awake. It was just, you know, I had that experience, and I was able to do it, and I was able to see all the people around me falling asleep, and some of them would leave, right? Some of them, they were just so tired, they couldn't hardly stand up, and they just left early. But they were the, you know, quote unquote quitters and losers, and the, you know, the diehard loyal people were still there. So that's how they sort of build you up. If you stay there, then you're a good guy. If you left early or if you fell asleep, then you're not so good. You're not so loyal. You're not so dedicated. And so it's all that sort of psychology, to try to, and I do agree that there's a lot of similarities between that and cults. I tend to downplay the cult part, not because there aren't similarities, because there are. I agree that there are. The problem I have with cults is, at least in the United States, they're legal. They're protected by the First Amendment, right? Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association. Those are all in our Bill of Rights. And so cults, in at least in America, are not illegal. And so I would prefer to focus on the illegal activities, which we talk about early in the show, the tool scams and the lack of retail sales, because every minute you take away from that to talk about cults or talk about, oh, they weren't very nice to me or whatever, whatever the issue is, you're taking away the attention from the illegal activities. And that's why I tend to downplay the cult aspect. Not that it's not there. I'm not denying that it's there. I'm just saying, okay, it's there, but what are you going to do? You know, you can't tell the FTC they kept me up late at night because there's no law against that. You know, you made the choice to stay up at late, just like people stay up to play video games. So, you know, it's just not a thing that a law enforcement or a regulator type of a organization would raise an eyebrow over. It's like, okay, all right, you stayed up late. Okay, what's your next complaint, right? and that's where I come from. That's why I have the positions that I have. Peter, did you have anything to add or ask or comment or whatever?
Yeah, I'll just give you my perspective, and then I want to be able to build up on this, so give me just a minute or two to kind of build this up. So here's the basic premise. Human beings can take a good thing and screw it up, but MLMers do it better. So there's the cliche. You know, Scott, how they always have cliches? Well, there's mine. Human beings could screw anything that's good up, but MLMers do it better. So let's talk about the good things about a function. So whether it's a three-month function or the yearly function, if you take a look at it, and we're going to list the good things, and then we're going to list how the MLMers screw it up after I'm done. But as a company, a function is a great place to get people together. They can socialize. They bond. They connect. They develop their culture. All that stuff is really good. They might introduce a new product, and they want to introduce that new product the right way. So just like a car might be introduced at a car show, or we used to do them at kickoff meetings in direct sales, if you have a new product, that enthusiasm is very helpful towards introducing it. Sometimes you can get some key leaders. If it's a health and nutritional product, you have a doctor. If it's a technology-driven product, maybe you have the technology to being able to be displayed. So it's a great thing for product introduction. Next, it's cost-effective. I'm going to pick on the typical YouTube guru who says, oh, I own my own business too. So really? Okay, so can you have like a function like bring George W. Bush at any level, you know? Are you able to do that? You know, you and your editor, are you going to be able to do that and create that kind of momentum and have that kind of leverage? The answer is probably not. So there's huge leverage. I'm going to use the word leverage. If you're a regular business owner, if you wanted to have a meeting in Las Vegas and have entertainment and a band and good food, I mean, you'd be spending a ton of money. So the cost, relatively speaking, is usually many times a good value. So there's many, and we can go through another dozen really good reasons to have a function. So that's the good reasons. But now I'm going to come back to my human beings can screw anything that's good up, and MLMers do it better. And some of the things that you've highlighted already are some of those things that can help them screw it up. And one of the things that I noticed, and I'll go like with one of mine, I remember the unbelievable pressure to be able, like especially when with Amway, it was like, you got to be at every function. You cannot miss it. And do whatever it takes to get to that function. And there were many times I would just say, this doesn't make sense logically. It doesn't make sense financially. It's going to hurt the business. It's going to hurt the relationship the person has, because just like Jerome had mentioned, you got to pay for the ticket. You have to pay to get there. A lot of people don't realize that not everybody has work clothes that are fitting, so you might have to buy some clothes. You have to buy meals, pay for a babysitter, take some time off of work. The cost associated with going to a function is huge, and there is so much pressure. I mean, so much pressure. This is where you get into the level of stupidity and corruption and cult-likeness that happens in the MLM world. They'll say, you know, do whatever it takes. You know, max out your credit cards. you know, clean out your garage, you know, have a garage sale, sell your breast milk, whatever the hell it might be. There's a level of, oh my God, the function is important, but people have to really make a personal decision on whether going to that function is important or not. And, or it was something they should be doing or not, or maybe something you should prevent them from doing or not. And just to pick on, I think it was Paparazzi, Scott, they did their first convention in the middle of a COVID thing. And I should not smirk or smile when I said this, because 11 people died, I think the number was. I don't know what the body count was, but 11 people died that went to that convention from COVID shortly afterwards. And a lot of people would probably say if they stayed home, would they have gotten COVID? And probably statistically, they would not have gotten COVID or died. And when you took a look at these people, you'd say, oh my God, they were overweight. Oh my God, they were diabetic. What is she doing in a wheelchair? Like, oh my God, she's heavy. She's a diabetic. She's in a wheelchair. She's going to a meeting, and she's going to be sitting there in front of all these people, and then she's died, you know, within 2 months or a month or so later. So there's that personal responsibility that sometimes gets skewed when people are, you know, hyped up about these types of conventions. So the one thing that I wanted to underline is that conventions or these meetings serve a great function when done the right way, but just like everything else, MLMers have a tendency to really screw it up. So I mentioned one, the idea that they put you into financial, you know, hock by making sure you go to all these functions when you're running a non-profitable business. The other ones might be health, especially with COVID. When it was COVID, made no sense to be doing these things. There's a whole bunch of other reasons as well. I'm going to let you guys jump on top of those as well.
Yeah, and once you realize why they're pushing these functions, why they're pushing, you know, the books, the meetings, the, you know, the recording, but they push all of it very hard. Once you realize that's where most of their money comes from, then it's one of those, duh, of course they're pushing it hard. And even though they push it really hard, they probably get, I would estimate, between 20 and 30% of the people actually buy into it. And so, you know, just by pushing it really, really hard, they get a small percentage. So if they didn't push it really, really hard, they would get an even smaller percentage and make that much less money from the tool scam. So in my mind, it's all pushed by the almighty dollar. It's all that tool scam money. That's why they push it so hard, why it's so important, why it's so critical to, quote unquote, your business, because you might hear something that's going to, you know, cause you to, you know, go direct or go platinum or diamond or whatever. And that's why they push it so hard, and that's where they make most of their money. So, you know, it just makes perfect sense once you understand where they make most of their money, why they push it so hard. So, but that's really good, Peter. I agree with you. It's one of those things that, you know, it's, and like Jerome was saying, it's pretty universal amongst other MLMs too. So it's good to get that perspective from other MLMs, because I've never been in another one. And so it's just real good to, you know, talk with somebody that has experience with multiple MLMs and go into some of these meetings. So, Jerome, did you have any other want to expand on anything that me or Peter were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, cults aren't by definition good or bad. They are neutral, and most people, whether they realize it or not, are probably in several cults. Like, if you're a Lakers fan, that meets the definition of a cult, because, you know, you might have a group of friends, and they'll expect you to watch every Lakers game, and they'll expect you to want them to win every game. You know, that any kind of herd mentality can be considered a cult and can meet the definition, and they can be good. Like youth groups, like the Boy Scouts and the Cubs and whatever, those technically are cults as well, because, you know, they meet once a week. They teach them their own set of cause of beliefs and values, and you know, expect them to all fall into like that herd. So, like you mentioned, religion is also a cult, but I guess what I was getting to is, when you use the word cult, people envision like Waco. That's what they think. That would be, you know, the street use of the word. So when I was looking at the manipulative strategies used with the sleep deprivation and the use of affection and then withdrawing, it's like, you know, because I was definitely a target for the negative when I went to those Amway meetings, because they really hated the guy who brought me in was a personal friend and a doctor. I spoke about him before, and he actually I got him to quit because I kept pointing all these things out to him every time we went, like when they said like they wanted their $10 to attend the weekly meeting. And I was like, but isn't it going to be exactly the same as last week? Why do we have to keep coming? And they're like, oh, you might miss something that's going to make you more money. And I said, but we're not going to miss anything because it's the exact same presentation. And it's just somebody else's story. They use the term mindset. One of the other characteristics of a cult is to what they call reprogramming. So they'll take phrases or specific words, which may or may not have a meaning to regular people, but they'll assign us a meaning in their own language. So they'll call, they have like a term for TV, like the dumbificator or the time waster or whatever. I can't remember what it is. Scott, do you remember what they call TV?
Yeah, I think there were several terms for it, but basically it was a money drain. You know, you should be spending your time showing the Amway plan, not watching TV. You should be listening to the recordings. You should be reading a book. You should be doing all these things because we're selling that to you and we're making a lot of money. That's why we want you to. They don't say that part, but that's what the real motivation is they want you to consume these things because they're selling them to you and they're making money from it. And they do want to get you to stay in as long as they can. And so they're trying to build you up. They're trying to, like you say, love bomb you. And I have to say that from a content standpoint, I don't really have a big issue with the tools. It was the fact that that's where they were making most of their money and they never talked about that. So that was the real hard part for me. And I know, you know, going to the multiple meetings that are pretty much the same, it was often mentioned, you know, you might pick up a little nugget, right? A little piece of information that's going to make all the difference for you. You know, maybe someone will say almost the same thing, but they'll say it a little bit differently, and you'll think to yourself, that's a really good way of saying that. I'm going to put that as part of my approach when I show people the marketing plan. And so that's what's constantly being fed into you also, is that you're trying to fine-tune your own sort of performance by doing these things. And I'm not a real big person into the, you know, the whole you know, there's a lot of people that say you can brainwash people, and that's really been proven wrong clinically. You know, the people that are experts at that, most of them agree that there's no such thing as brainwashing. What there is lying and coming across in a way that's believable, which is what they're really good at. They can lie through their teeth and sound very believable. And that's why people follow them. You know, people would not follow them if they knew they were lying. And so they're really good at that. But that's not the same as brainwashing. That's just lying. And again, that's fraud. And so not only does brainwashing not exist, there's no laws against it, but there is laws against, being dishonest, especially in a business environment. You know, it's called fraud in a business environment. So again, that's why I, you know, kind of reject the whole brainwashing angle too, it just takes focus off of the things we need to keep focus on. And I'm not denying that they exist. I'm just saying, hey, that's really not something that any regulator or law enforcement agency is going to care about. It's just not something that's illegal. And so that's kind of where I come down on. I know other people really harp on the psychological stuff and all of that. I prefer not to, personally. So that's why. If that helps at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's no. I guess it's no different to other things like religions. Like if you join a regular religion, they'll want you to go to church or temple or whatever it is, whenever it may be for them. Like it might be a Saturday or a Sunday morning, and if you go often enough, you'll hear it'll be the same thing. You'll hear the same prayers every week, and then the stories that the ministers give at the end will start to recycle. Like every time there's a wedding, they'll give a similar speech. Every time there's a new child born, it will be a similar speech. And then even on an annual basis, as you go through the seasons, when it's, you know, as each festival comes, the stories will change. And the Bible is the same story, and they probably have an annual way of telling that story and going through it. And so I guess it's no difference, and people do that for years on end. So it's not necessarily brainwashing, but I guess people fall into a routine. And what I noticed, when I read about the thing about Amway, when they have these defensive mechanisms to keep people out who might, bring free information. Like when they called a job just over broke, I started saying to them, well, you all have jobs. Like the person who sponsored me was still working as a general practitioner at a prison, funnily enough, but he had a job. And then the person above him told me that, you know, that they were school teachers. And then I was like, okay. And then at one of the, I think it was that same one that I went to where there was like thousands of people, with somebody even in their upline was there. And I kind of just offhandedly said, oh, well, what do you do during the week? And they also had a job. I'm like, well, how high do you have to climb before you can get, if a regular, career is just over broke, then, and this is supposed to be so much better, then why are you all still having jobs? Because, I mean, Amway doesn't even equal just over broke, it's under broke because you're spending money. I guess that's what irritated me, was that they rarely work hard. They know that what the objections are going to be. Like if somebody joins, they know that their friends and family are going to say these things to them, like, oh, it's going to cost you money. You're overpaying for the products. You're spending all this time. You're losing time. You can't come to birthday parties anymore. We don't see you anymore because you're always with them. And you can't go on vacations because you spent all of your annual leave and all of your vacation money going to seminars. And it changes their life for the worse. And it probably hurts their relationships outside of that community, which is no different to being in a religion. Like if you are in a religion that says, you know, we don't, we spend all day Saturday together with our people. We don't go to sports events and we don't go to parties until, you know, we do that on the other 6 days. Then, you know, you're, as a kid, where most of the birthday parties and most of the social events are on Saturday nights, all of a sudden you can only hang out with people inside your little group. And that's exactly what they're trying to do, to stop outside information coming in.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there's, I would call it different levels of cults. You know, some of them are relatively mild and benign, and some of them are very hardcore, right? And so there's this whole range of cults that you can sort of look at and say, you know, like that religion is way over the top. They demand every minute of your time. Amway demands every minute of your time, whereas some churches, hey, if you come to Sunday worship, that's fine, that's enough. You know, if you want to do more, you can do more. If you don't want to, you're still welcome here. And so it really does run the gamut as far as the levels of cultiness, I guess you could call it. But Amway's up there. I mean, it's towards the top as far as the expectation. Now, I would have to also say it's not unusual that you have to apply yourself to be successful. you know, I had to apply myself in college to get an electrical engineering degree. I had to apply myself to get through the Navy nuclear power program. So I knew coming into Amway, and I came in at 33, almost 34 years old, that you do have to apply yourself to achieve something that's meaningful. You can't just, you know, it's not just going to happen. And I think a lot of people that don't have that life experience when they get in, like they get in at 18 years old, and they're told, hey, you know, you're going to get rich really quick. They believe it. And so it's one of those things that, you know, when you have more life experience, then you can sort of grade what you're being told and bounce it off of your own experience. And that's kind of similar too, you know, when you go, let's say when you go to church and you hear a certain message, well, if you hear a really similar message, let's say 10 years in the future, because of your 10 years of life experiences, you're going to hear something a little bit different because you can connect it to something else that happened in your life. And that message, even though the message is the same, the message that's received is different. And that's part of the Amway thing too, is they say, you know, the more you are building the business and the more you learn about different things, you know, how people operate, you know, how people think, how they behave, then when we tell you pretty much the same thing you heard last year or last month, it's going to mean something because you had those intervening experiences that you can connect the message to that you simply didn't have the first time that you heard it because it was the first time. So there's always a sort of a good positive angle to everything you hear in Amway. But at the same time, when you know about the basics, which is, again, I'll be repetitious here, the tool scam and lack of retail sales, then you see the other side of the same message. The same words mean something completely different once you know what's really going on behind the scenes. You know, like we talked about earlier, gosh, they really push the tools. I wonder why that is. Well, once you realize that's where they make most of their money, then it becomes obvious. Whereas if you didn't know that, it would be kind of like, gee, this is kind of cultish. This is kind of weird. They keep pushing these tools. I wonder why. And so, you know, once you know more, then you know more about how to interpret what you're being told. I guess that's kind of where I come from. Peter, did you have anything to add to that discussion?
We're all good.
All right. Sounds good. And was there anything else, Jerome, you wanted to get into as far as the conferences, the functions, or whatever?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, with anything, with any life habit, repetition obviously helps to cement it and to build it. You know, it's like the old analogy that if you go for a short run, like even if you just try and sprint 100 meters every day, if you do it every day, you'll gradually get better and faster. And I guess that's the whole concept with the Amway, the repetition of the information. Like, you know, if they keep drumming it in, it will sink. It will go in a little bit deeper with each repetition, even if it is. I guess I just don't respond to that because monotony doesn't sort of work well with me. But if it was something that was genuinely useful, then I would be okay with it. Like I use the same analogy like with reality TV. Like a lot of these shows where people are just humiliating themselves for the sake of being on TV, like Fear Factor, you know, you want to be known as the person that, you know, that drank horse semen just to be on TV. Like, no, you don't. But if you come out with $250,000 at the end, then you'll say it was worth it, but only the one person gets to do that. The show that I didn't mind was, we had one in Australia called The Biggest Loser. I think you had it there as well.
Yes.
And I actually, like my roommate at the time, used to like watching it, so I started watching it with her, and I thought this is actually a good show, because even the people that get eliminated get some benefit. Like, they get some life advice, they get some dietary advice, they get some exercise advice. And even watching the show, I started getting motivated to exercise myself. I'm like, you learn things like, exercising your thigh, like your thigh muscles are the biggest muscle in your body. So if you exercise them, you burn the most calories. Like little bits of information like that. And I'm sure there's a lot of cooking information that came from that, the Australian version told us that kangaroo meat is the lowest in fat because, it's a wild, muscly animal that doesn't have a high fat content. And I've heard the same thing with, I listened to the Joe Rogan show on the internet, and he said the same thing about wild game. You know, like if you eat meat that's been a wild animal that's been out there running and exercising, it's much healthier than eating, like a big fat cow, basically. There is good that can come out of all of these different things. But the problem that I have is that MLMs as a system, they appear that they're designed to fail. They're not designed to give people a business opportunity. When I just looked at Optavia, when you join Optavia, when you buy the product, 28% of what you pay goes to the person who sponsored you in direct commissions. Plus, they might earn up to $1,250 in cash bonuses if they're on a fast start or a consistency bonus. And then the upline above them gets another 32% commission, plus another $1,250 in bonuses because they get matching bonuses. And then if there's any directors in your upline, there's another 13.5% that go to them. So now we're up to 73.5% of the price you've paid goes directly to your upline in the form of commission. And that's before profits have been made for Optavia, and they haven't covered the cost of production or anything like that. So they're going to make these goods and make a profit for themselves, and then they're going to have to pretty much quadruple the price after that to fund this compensation plan. So there's absolutely no way that they can be offering any products or services that are competitive with the normal market, because their costs of distribution aren't that much lower than going out and selling directly to a supermarket or going through a normal retail chain. And now with companies like Amazon and things, selling direct to customers is also quite cost effective. So, that's 73.5%, which they claim is cheaper than going through advertising because they want to give, better products to their consumers. It's a blatant lie. They must know it. So I guess I'm getting to the point where I'm realizing that there is some intent somewhere. And when they say, I was reading that the first billionaire in MLM was Myron Wentz from USANA. He didn't make it, but he founded the company. So he is literally the top of the pyramid.
Yeah, that 73% is the highest I've ever heard. Usually it's in the 40% neighborhood, but you're right. Whatever the percent bonus is being paid out comes from whoever bought that product or service. That's a very fundamental idea that I don't know how many people realize that, but it's absolutely true. And when you keep paying out, more and more bonuses to all the different layers of upline, that just makes that product or service more difficult to sell to a customer, particularly. I mean, even to a distributor it makes it difficult, but particularly to a customer who has no other incentive to buy the product other than the price, right? The price and the performance, that's why they buy it. That's the end of the whole deal. And that's why I keep harping on retail sales, because, if you have products that are not competitively priced, I believe it's impossible to have widespread retail sales. The only way you can do it would be if you're lying about the product and what it can do. That would be, where I come down on it. The recent case of Neora, Just looking at their products, they look very expensive to me. But the whole mountain of evidence that was brought to court, as far as I can tell, I've only read the decision. I haven't seen all the, you know, different evidence and all of that. It's not available yet. It would probably take a lifetime to look at it. But anyway, they claim they have, you know, 75-80% of their products being bought by customers. And the challenge I have with that is the FTC never talked to any distributors, you know, current or former distributors. If it was me giving the FTC advice, and by the way, I'm going to be doing that really soon, I would say, look, I think there's a lot of cheating going on. You need to dig into this as a regulator and find out if people are selling these products to their dogs. You know, they're just making up customers, in other words. I was taught explicitly to manipulate the computer to take some of our personal consumption purchases and make them look like retail sales just by manipulating the computer. And it was all very nonchalant. You know, the upline said, oh, yeah, we worked this out with the company. Don't worry about it. So, they took all of the sort of questioning away, and they made it just very simple and acceptable to do this. And, of course, I had no idea the importance of retail sales at that time, and so it didn't really raise a big alarm bell in my head. You know, it was just something that we were taught and we did it. And also I was raising a young family at the time. I had a job. I had, you know, a lot of other things going on, and I really didn't have a lot of time to think about it. And that's part of what they do too, is they want to take up as much time with their agenda so that you don't have time to think. That's definitely part of what's going on, you know, not just at the functions, but all the time. They want you to listen to at least one recording a day. They want you to read at least 15 minutes out of a book every day. They want you to show the marketing plan at least 15 times a month, which means you also have to contact a bunch of people just to show a marketing plan. And then you have to follow up with the people that you showed the marketing plan to. And so you can see how the hours just keep adding up and adding up to where you don't have any time to just think. You're just doing everything. You're your job, your family, your Amway business, and you just go, and you literally don't have time to think. And that's why they want you to keep what they call plugged into the tools, because if you ever unplugged yourself, then you would have time to think, and then you would start questioning, what am I really doing here? What is going on? What, you know, why am I going nowhere? What's happening? So it's all what I called Jerome. I called an evil genius. This is a very smart thing that they're doing. It's pure evil, and they're really good at it. They've been honing this for almost 2/3 of a century when it comes to Amway, and all of the other MLMs seem to have, you know, glommed on to the same patterns, and you back that up. And so there's this proven method, as imperfect as it might look to an individual, it's really the perfect method to continue, this complete scam. And I have to also make a comment. When they cover the same things every meeting, there's two things there. One is, you're expected to bring new people, and so they're hearing it for the first time. And so even though you're hearing it maybe for the 50th time, you're supposed to try to bring new people in, and then it's not going to be repetitious to them. It's going to be brand new to them. And they, in the next meeting, are going to be expected to bring another new person. And so even though they've heard it twice or 10 times, that new person that they brought, or maybe it's a new person that you brought, it's their first time. And the other thing about that is, if they changed it every meeting, then it would be just pure confusion, right? It almost has to be the same thing, or else you wouldn't know what's going on. You know, it would be so confusing. Gee, every time we meet, it's something different. Why are we keep changing everything? You know, what is it going to be next time? It would be that kind of a thing that you would create by changing so much. And so again, those are the positive, like Peter was talking about, those are the good reasons why you want to repeat things. But again, when you know what's really going on, then you understand there's a different motive behind that sort of strategy, of repeating things over and over. There really is an evil genius behind it. And that's what we're trying to expose with this show and other activities that we're doing, to show people the entire picture. Because if you see the picture that only the Amway side of things paints, it looks pretty good. It's only when you figure out, you know, either on your own or you know, listening or watching people that have a different viewpoint, you realize, oh, that was only half the picture. That was the only the half that they wanted me to see. Now that I know the whole picture, I can see this is nothing I ever want to come close to again for the rest of my life. And hopefully you'll want to tell other people, because that's, to me, that's the key to this. Is we can talk on this radio show all day long, and we're working on our ninth year right now. But unless other people tell other people and tell other people, just like network marketing, right? you have to spread the word, and everyone that hears it needs to spread the word. Just like in Amway, you want to sponsor somebody that then sponsors somebody that then sponsors somebody. We have to use the same methodology to get the word out to people, because it won't take every single last person on the planet to know. It's only going to take enough percentages. It's almost like putting sugar in your gas tank. It doesn't take a whole 5-pound bag. It just takes a couple teaspoonfuls and you're going to mess up the engine. And that's the same thing with people finding out about MLM scams. Is, and I'm just going to guess at a number here, maybe 10 or 20% of the population, once they realize what's going on, and they basically turn down the offer, I think there's going to be enough frustration out there where the new person quits. And then when the new person quits, the layer above them quits, and then it just sort of collapses from the bottom up. But we have to get to whatever that magic percentage is of people that are aware of what's going on. That's the direction of saturation I think is going to work, versus, you know, what the anti-MLMers talk about with, saturating everybody's in and now there's nobody else that can get in. That just doesn't even occur. And unfortunately, this doesn't occur either. What I'm talking about is we don't have very many people spreading the word, but that's what's going to have to happen if we want to sort of fix this from the ground up. My idea is that the regulators need to get on the stick, and boy, do they need to learn. they have a lot to learn. And so it's a challenge, you know, whether it's the regulators or just people. And that's why your website is so good, because you cover all these different MLMs. And so someone that's curious about a particular company is going to find your website, and they're going to learn about it. And if they start reading some of the other stories about other MLMs, they're going to see, gee, these things are a lot more alike than they are different. And that's a great thing that you're doing. And we need more people to spread the word, either, you know, it doesn't have to be through a website. It could be just, you know, talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, your relatives, and encourage them to do the same thing. You know, don't let it stop with them. Tell them that they need to keep passing the message on as well. That's what's going to fix this thing. I don't think there's one area. I'm an all of the above guy. So talk to your politicians, talk to your regulators, talk to your neighbors, talk to the media, talk to everybody you can think of, because we don't know which angle is going to ultimately be successful. I think it's the regulators has the best chance, but that doesn't mean I don't talk to other people. You know, that's just kind of how I approach the whole thing. But good points. Anything more on that one, Jerome? Anything that I said you want to react to, or Peter, did you hear something you wanted to comment on or ask about?
Nope, all good stuff. Jerome, how about you?
Yeah, just with with Niora claiming that they had 80% retail sales, it got me interested. I'm going to go back. They're actually one that I haven't done any research on. So I'd be interested to see how their compensation plan is structured, because I have a feeling that the participants are the retail customers. They found a way to define it. Like something I noticed in Optavia is that they haven't asked people to, there's no PV quota to remain active. You know, most of them have the requirement for participants to actually buy a certain quota personally in order to stay active in the compensation plan. But in Optavia, it's all about group volume, and they separate it frontline qualifying volume and group qualifying volume. So your frontline is personally sponsored, and then the group would be your ongoing second and below. But what they said with the frontline volume that you can earn commission on, it didn't say five coaches in your downline. It said entities. Once you have five what they call entities, you go up to the higher level. You go from earning the 13% up to the 28%. So you're doubling your potential commission. So it's definitely and it's also done through it's all done just through a link, you know, your personal web link. So you can go into the web link and type in a Mickey Mouse name and then pay for it yourself and have it delivered to your own house. And that will register as a different entity. And then, yeah, like you were saying, like, you know, they can be ordering for their dogs and calling it a retail sale. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's what it is. And I had a, like when you were saying with the FTC needing to investigate it, it comes down to them having resources. I mean, I had an incident here. I think I mentioned it on the first show I was on, where I was working with an accounting firm in Sydney, and I noticed that at the time I was doing mortgages for them, and they brought on this guy from overseas and said that he was and let him work in the financial planning area, running, actually investing people's what we call superannuation, which is our retirement savings, which is highly regulated in Australia. And I knew for a fact that he wasn't qualified to do that. Like legally, he wasn't allowed to do that in Australia because he didn't have, he hadn't passed the licensing requirements. He hadn't done what we at the time called PS 146, which is now called something else because they've changed it recently. But you basically just have to do, it's not even that difficult. You can do it in probably 3 or 4 months. You just go online and it's all these multiple choice questions and whatever. It's really basic, rubber stamping to get you through, but it teaches you just to ensure you know the basic laws and you know how to do the compliance side of it. And he lost a lot of money for clients. Like he even stole money. Like he took money out of their retirement savings and then disappeared overseas again. I think he disappeared with like $40,000 or $50,000. And I called the regulators here, which is our ASIC, which is the equivalent of your FTC, and the person on the phone said, oh my God, that's like terrible. That's definitely a big problem. And then they wanted more information. So I sent them all the information that I had. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call back from them saying, yeah, you're right. What they did was wrong. And we just don't have the resources to do anything about it. So we're just going to ignore it. So these people are still in business and still operating that way and still putting through the same people were opening false insurance policies because they opened one in my name because they had my name and phone number and they had my details on record because I'd been there for other reasons. And I got a call from one of the insurance companies here saying these people have opened an account in your name because the way that the insurance commissions work here on life insurance is they pay more than 100% of the premium value in commission to the insurance agents in the first year. Some of them were paying like 125%, with the assumption being that the person is going to stay on for several years and the policy will turn profitable. So what these people were doing was they were opening false insurance policies and paying for it themselves. Then they'd get 125% commission, so they'd be up by 25%. And then the day after, or right before the annual renewal time, they would cancel the policy. So effectively, they were stealing the 25% from the insurance company. And, you know, I had all this evidence, and the regulators weren't interested because they weren't a big enough fish. So I think when it comes to chasing MLMs, the time and effort required into going into validating all that data, like into saying, well, you know, it's back to the MLM's exit strategy is to blame the individual. So if Octavia sends you out paperwork saying you must, like, anything through this link is considered a retail sale, but no one's going to check where it really goes and who really makes the purchases. And then they might say in the small print, you must not order more than you will personally use. And then when the FTC has to go and investigate, they're not going to go door to door and say, was this a real customer? Was this a real customer? Was this a real customer? And it's just the logistics of doing that is just too difficult.
Well, it might be, but really that's the only way that these people can be uncovered. You know, if they're not willing to do that, then they may as well just say, you guys are on your own. We're not going to regulate MLMs, you know, let the buyer beware. That would be a better situation than it is now, because the FTC holds themselves up, like most regulators, as we're here to protect you. We're, you know, we're going to go after all these bad guys and all that sort of thing. So if they don't do it effectively, it would be better. Not only would it save me the tax money to pay their salaries and so forth, but then I would not have this false sense of confidence that the regulators are actually doing their job. It would be let the buyer beware, and then people would naturally have to be more cautious because, gee, there's no regulator over this, so I better check into this rather than depending on them. Because that's a common refrain from Amway is, gee, if we were an illegal pyramid, you know, we've been around for, you know, name the number of years. When I got started, it was 30-something. Now it's up to 60-something years. We've been around for 60-something years. Don't you think if we were an illegal pyramid, we would have been shut down by now? You know, and that's a very sort of convincing argument that MLMs make. It does kind of make sense. But you have to assume that the regulators are doing their job, and they're not. So it's, you know, it should be all one way or the other. You know, either be a regulator and do your job, or just say we don't regulate MLMs, because the way it is now, it's the worst situation for the consumer, because they think they're being protected and they're not. And really, Peter and I were talking about this right before the show is, I don't think there's another active MLM lawsuit right now. So if the FTC, maybe I mentioned it early in this show, if they started a lawsuit Monday morning on another MLM, it would take another 4 or 5, maybe even more years to resolve it. And during that, all that time, all those years, there's millions of people every single one of those years, just in the United States alone, that are being scammed. And so it's very important when they go after these individual companies that they do a thorough job, that they approach it in the right way and put whatever resources they have to into it. Otherwise, we're just not making progress. We're actually going backwards, because one of the things in the Neora lawsuit, and I can send you guys the document, the findings document from the judge. It's 50-something pages from the Neora decision. It's also on pacer.gov, if you are familiar with that website. And it's free. You get up to, like, I think it's $30 per quarter free. And it costs, like, I want to say 10 cents a page or something. And there's a limit of 30 pages where, you know, if it's over 30 pages, then it's just the $30. It doesn't go above that price. But anyway, one of the things that's in this lawsuit, which, you know, I'm sure the other MLMs are just looking forward to implementing something similar, is with Niora, there was 5 levels of discounts. There was the full retail price, and then there was different discounts, you know, if you were a preferred customer, if you were a preferred customer on AutoShip, if you were a distributor, if you were a distributor on AutoShip. So there was these different levels of discount for the products. And so what's happening, and Niora openly admitted to this, is that the largest discount is if you're a distributor on AutoShip. And so they said that around 30% of their new distributors every year are people that used to be preferred customers, and they decided to spend the $20 it takes to become a distributor just to get the discounts. They had no intent of, you know, building an organization. They just wanted the biggest discount that they could get their hands on, which is actually logical, right? Who would not want to get the largest discount? And so that's going on with Niora. And now I'm sure other MLMs are going to go, well, that's a kind of a good idea. I think we're going to do that too. The problem is it muddles the division between what's a customer and what's a distributor. And that line needs to be very definite, you know. And so they should not be allowed to give larger discounts to distributors as they do to preferred customers. That way there would not be an incentive to become a distributor just to get a larger discount. And that's something that, you know, is in this lawsuit that's kind of a new loophole, if you will, a new way of teaching other MLMs on how to get away with sort of muddying the waters between a customer and a distributor. So it really is a mess. I mean, I think that the FTC made a bigger mess with this lawsuit than if they had done nothing. That's how bad it is. It is terrible. To use the words incompetent and inept, don't even come close to the just total neglect and incompetence that the FTC and the experts, I put experts in quotes, that they used to go after Niora. It's just terrible. Again, now we're another 4 or 5 plus years from another decision, unless the FTC decides to go after these guys again, which they can do, by the way. You know, if it was a criminal lawsuit, then, you know, at least in the United States, you can only prosecute that crime once. But if it's a civil issue, which it is with the FTC, then they can go after them again. They can say, hey, we have a new approach, we have a new fact pattern, we're going to see you guys again. And so it may not be over. Hopefully it's not. But again, it's going to take another 2 or 3 years minimum, you know, to restart the lawsuit if they want to get to an endpoint. It is really time consuming, and it's frustrating that so many people get scammed in the interim time. That's the problem, is it takes so long in our system to get through the system, that people just keep getting away with stuff for years and years and years. So I'll get off my little soapbox. They call it SA8 in Amway. And Jerome, is there any last comments? Or Peter, did you have any last comments before we ask Jerome to kind of – because I always like to ask guests, Jerome, to talk about something that maybe you were thinking of before or you thought of during the show that we didn't get to talk about. Was there anything along those lines? Or Peter, did you have any last – comments to add?
I have none other for me to add.
Okay. So, Jerome, was there anything more? Because we're getting close to our time limit here.
No, just I think that just what you're saying there with most of the companies have somewhere in their documents that the lie that people join the business opportunity just to get the products cheaper. If that was true, they'd be buying different products because they would go, you know, you can find better quality products on the free market at a better price. But what I was, I think what this loophole has done with Niora is probably what I'm seeing in Optavia in a different way, because when there's no personal volume requirement, so you can buy the products yourself and pay the full, you know, their wholesale price, or you can pretend to be your own customer and get, you know, a 28% refund, which would then become would look like a retail customer for the FTC's purposes, plus the distributor themselves gets it cheaper. So it's, I guess that might have been their intent in how they formed the system, because I was trying to figure out why it was done like that. So that probably makes sense. And I think the other thing, you know, with the conflict in the Middle East that's just broken out again, I just remember back in 93 when the peace talks first started, and, you know, and Bill Clinton and the two Middle Eastern leaders, the three of them jointly won the Nobel Peace Prize, and nothing's really eventuated of that. There has been no peace. It's a 30-year anniversary of that now, and there hasn't really been any real progress. And I was reading an article in The Economist magazine last night saying that the system was designed to fail because neither side wanted it to succeed. And when you look at it from that point of view of systems that are designed to fail, that's what an MLM is for the downline. If I'm looking at a company that's paying out 73.5%, and you say, where's the room for profit? The only way that's possible is if they're not really paying all those profits out. They're not paying all of the, like, that 73.5%. The only people at the director's level and above are probably the founders of the company and are really high up, and that is the company profits. So the same thing, like with Myron Rentz being the first MLM billionaire, it's because he literally started USANA. He's the top of the pyramid. And all these dangling carrots of, you know, you can then earn another 1.5%, and then you can earn like 3% of this downline and all that downline. It's not going to happen. Like, if you're looking, the attrition rate is just too large. I looked at Herbalife, and because they're a public company, I had they had to publish their annual report, and they were very proud of the fact that 48.5% of members quit that year. That was a good year for them. Like, they didn't say it like that. They said the raw number of people that quit, and then you look at the total number of distributors for the year, and you can see, like, literally 48, like close to half of them quit in a single 12-month period, and that was one of their best years on record. So we're looking at endless recruitment. It has to happen, and it doesn't. They don't run out of people because they probably get repeat customers. They probably get people that you know, join, and then they quit. And then, like, one of my friends who joined Amway often says that he wouldn't mind going back again just for a few months because, you know, he kind of liked the social aspect of it, or he liked, you know, the motivation side of it, because it kind of made him feel a bit better. And then I talked him out of it because I said, well, I said, you should tell them that. Tell them that you're only there for 6 weeks just to get a bit of hype. And they won't even let you join, probably, because they don't want that. They don't want people that aren't going to try and recruit others. So there's probably a lot of revolving customers that maybe think things like they want to go back for social reasons, or they convince themselves that if they had the right upline, then it would be a different story. So I think that there definitely is constant recruitment going on, but they don't run out of people because, you know, there's people. Well, first of all, there's more people coming into the market. You know, there's young people reaching mature age that are now legally able to join these things. And there's people that jump from one to the next. Like, they'll try one and it will fail, and they'll say, well, the business model was good, but the product was bad, so now I'm going to try it with makeup. Oh, that didn't work. Now I'm going to try it with weight loss pills. Oh, that didn't work. What else can we try? And then, you know, they jump from one to the next. There's a lot of hoppers, like the oils. The essential oils is one of the strangest ones because, you know, it's literally a chemical extract that can't really change very much from one to the next, yet they claim to be of a higher level of certification, and then they claim to have all these medical benefits which haven't been proven. It's kind of nuts, but I think that the MLM, they won't take it down anytime soon because it's too difficult. And the MLMs have learned how to play the legal game.
Yeah, they definitely have the high-paid lawyers. And you were saying something earlier that reminded me of something. There are some groups within Amway, it's not all of them, and it wasn't the group I was in, but there are some groups where they have their distributors buy the products at full retail costs, right? They're eligible to buy them at, and when I say wholesale, they're still more expensive than what you can find on the market. So, you know, when you say wholesale, it doesn't mean it's a good deal. But any distributor in Amway is eligible to buy the products at their own IBO cost, not the full retail, which is generally 30% more. But some of these groups tell their people to buy the products at full retail, and then every month when they get their bonus check, it's bigger because not only do they get the PVBV from their own purchases and their downline and their customers, but they also get the price differential that they paid for their own products back in their bank account. So it looks like it's profit, even though it's just funny money, right? And so then they also say, now you have all that money that's coming back. Now you can fund going to the conferences with that money. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways they're slicing it and dicing it to, you know, but it's still trying to put lipstick on a pig, as we say. It's still a big mess. But anyway, I guess we'll wrap it up there. Again, Jerome, this has been just a great discussion we've had back and forth here. I will send both you guys the document for the NIORA. It's a 50-something page document that the judge goes through in pretty good detail, all the different points that both sides were making and how she came down on it. And bottom line is NIORA was 5-0 and the FTC was 0-5, and she made them the FTC and their experts, again in quotes, experts, look pretty inept. It was very disappointing to read this thing and how we got to where we are with NIORA. So anyway, again, thanks, Jerome. And Peter, I'll let you sign us off.
Excellent. So, Jerome, maybe one more time, give them your website.
Yep, it's financeguy.net. So finance-guy.net. If you just Google the Finance Guy, I believe I'm the second result. So it's, I'm pretty easy to find. And you can email me on there and you can leave comments. Somebody did send me a direct email, I think, from listening to this show, asking me to look at Kangen Water. And I'm actually going to do that because I started looking at them a couple of years ago and couldn't find enough information. But now there is enough information, so that will be coming soon. So if that person is listening, thank you for that.
Yeah, that's great. And Peter, you just reminded me of something else. You mentioned Clinton back in 93. There was also Jimmy Carter. He made a big deal in the Middle East too. I don't know if they won Nobel Peace Prizes, but there was a big, you know, big to-do back in the 1970s with the, you know, the U.S. president and both sides, the, you know, Israeli and the I guess it's Lebanese or whatever the Hamas is, and they had a big celebration. Oh yes, we have peace, and it just, like you say, it goes over and over again. It, you know, it works for a little while and then it gets out of hand, and then, you know, we step in and something happens, it calms down, then it heats up again. It's a never-ending battle. There's no doubt. It's a shame that it's that way, but that's, you know, and I think it's a good analogy to MLMs. You know, it's designed to fail sort of thing. It is. We just go over and over. I don't know if you know, are you guys familiar with Charlie Brown, the comic strip?
Yeah, with Jenny, when she keeps pulling the football and he keeps coming back for more.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that. Yep. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Jerome. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks. We'll see everybody next week on Building Fortunes Radio. Check them out. Go to Scott Johnson. If you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear this as well as the previous radio shows. And I believe we sent Jerome, or we have a guest page for Jerome as well. So if you do look in the guests, look for Jerome. He's got a guest page. And if, Jerome, you don't have that, let me just make sure that you know, to email me, and we'll make sure we put up a guest page for you as well so people have access to your material. We'll catch everybody next week on Building Fortunes Radio. So long, everyone.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.